Sir, introduces Vern Marshall.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am certain that you will be relieved to know that I have just been assured by Mr. Martin and others on this platform that this is, in fact, a Republican convention. Since Governor Stassen, we have heard every speaker refer to the battle we must wage to win back democracy from the kidnappers in Washington. Last night, there were so many battle cries that I heard them after retiring. I kept hearing them all night. And at dawn, when I looked out one of my corner windows in an apartment high on a hill a few miles from here, I gazed toward Washington. Then I looked toward Tidewater, Virginia, where the roots of my family are deeply buried. I thought of the noblemen that the Old Dominion has given this country, of Madison, Monroe, Jefferson, a trio of friends whose spirits must tremble today as they watch the crisis we are here to solve. Again, I heard in imagination Herbert Hoover's ringing call. Republicans, are you ready for this fight? And I remembered that moving line from Hamlet. There's a divinity that shapes our end. Rough hew them how we will. Let's paraphrase that sentence. Our ends are shaped by destiny, blind though we may be. And destiny is God. Somehow I was more than ever convinced that Iowa has the answer to all these battle cries and to your earnest prayers for success at this convention. For Iowa has the only battle commander who is a candidate for nomination for President of the United States. Imagine the pride I take in presenting to you the one candidate whose republicanism is not on order, but which is winning. The one candidate who was one of the greatest battle commanders in the history of American armed forces when he was in France 22 and 23 years ago. One of the greatest battle commanders the economic system of America, particularly the system of free enterprise, has had in the last 7 years war for preservation against New Deal rapacity. A man who personifies and symbolizes that which all of these convention speakers have told us we must have in leadership. I have heard others here speak of their children. Well, I have six of them.
And that's why I'm here, too. I want my six children to be able to play and run and walk the streets of their city as free as the air they breathe. And as I did when a boy. Whatever political dictator or tyrant, despoiler of our democracy, tries to deny them that right is an enemy before whom Iowa's battle commander and yours never will flinch or fail. This convention determines whether democracy lives or dies. You are the delegates. Yours is the decision. You have no bosses yet. This tempestuous runaway toward national ruin and dictatorship under the Roosevelt lash must be stopped immediately. Before those who planned it that way take us down their last mile toward the end of that bloodless revolution which they admit they used Mr. Roosevelt for as their Kerensky. We were warned 7 years ago by Dr. Wirth that this was their scheme and conspiracy. We weren't awake then, but we are today. The task awaiting us cannot be delayed. It must be done this week, not next November, when it may be too late. Each day's headlines warn us of the drift into catastrophe. The freedom guaranteed for us by that earlier Philadelphia convention is less endangered by brutalitarians abroad than by arrogant political plutocrats sitting not many miles from where you sit. Ours is an internal crisis, seriously aggravated by external complications, on which the New Deal quacks insist that we shall concentrate. It's the old shell game, played for tremendous stakes. Before we can halt a secondary infection, we must rid ourselves of the poison that saps our resistance to infection. Your duty is clear. Carve this malignant growth out of the District of Columbia. There lies the only capital in the entire world whose government manipulators deliberately invited the fifth column and the Trojan horse to enter and proceed with their dark conspiracies against us. Under sleeping sentries, we will wake up ourselves in the midst of an indescribable nightmare. So what? A group of us are here to offer you the formula and the man for victory in the fight this Republican convention must begin today. We bring you a battle commander who is real, a leader whose Republicanism is real. It's not synthetic, not this boy's Republicanism. He started fighting for your party and your country as a kid in 1924, back from the war. He headed the Republican Service League National Headquarters Office and Campaign in 24, 28, 32, 36.
He isn't a 90-day convert. Ours is a fight to be won with ballots, not bayonets and bullets or bombs. Without fanfare or ballyhoo, making no attempt whatsoever for more than the simplest presentation of our candidate, we are here to tell you his story. When it has been told, there will be no prearranged demonstration of enthusiasm. We might have planned it otherwise. There are 4 million ex-servicemen. We know a lot of leather-lunged citizens. But mere noise will get you and me nowhere. Horseplay can't meet this crisis. The man for whom we speak flatly refused to turn us loose in his behalf. Those who have long looked upon him as of presidential stature begged him for permission to start an organization to promote his candidacy. And what did he say? He said that whoever enters the White House in a time of crisis such as this should be invited to enter it by the landlord, Uncle Sam, and should not try to crash the gates. When our man says no, he means it. And when he says yes, he means that too. And you can believe him. That's just one reason why he is an outstanding, successful, industrialist, farmer, statesman, soldier, with two-fisted, red-blooded friends and acquaintances in every populous precinct of this country. Think that over in passing. Denied permission to build a campaign organization among his legion of friends, some of them for more than a year, have nevertheless been traveling in numerous states on our own time and at our own expense, interviewing representatives of the great mass of Republican voters whose support is essential to Republican success in this fight for the restoration and preservation of democracy in the United States of America. Everywhere we've found that the remarkable personality of our chosen leader has left its imprint. We learned that thousands scattered throughout the length and breadth of the land are ready and eager to go from house to house, ringing doorbells in his behalf and getting out the votes to win your battle if this fellow leads it. Many of these people are influential and important citizens in various fields of activity, but most are humble men and women without whose aid and interest your party and mine wastes its time and effort. Born 50 years ago in the heart of the Farm Belt, whose sturdy inhabitants are watching this convention most intently, Iowa's candidate might have become as useless to his country
as have certain other children of wealth. An only son, an only child, mind you. This youngster who later was to be acclaimed on two continents by three governments, attended the public schools in his city. Then he came east, prepared for Harvard, and was graduated from Harvard. Before going into business, he traveled throughout the world with eyes and ears open. He returned home, went to work, enlisted in the National Guard as a private, became a shave-tailed lieutenant. Trouble arose on the Mexican border. Down on the Rio Grande, he gained a reputation as an excellent officer. That was 1916, the year a Democratic president was re-elected because he had kept us out of war, out of an earlier episode in Europe's eternal fighting. 5 months after that election, we were jockeyed into a conflict 3,000 miles away. We set forth to save the world for democracy by fighting a war to end all wars. The Democratic president told us that was our mission. And its dissolute futility, aided by Europe's diplomats, disillusioned us then. But the debt, disillusionment, and depression it brought us were nothing as compared to what we will get, you and I, if the heir to the Wilson administration drags us into another adventure beyond the sea. Immediately after we entered that episode of Europe's eternal conflict, our candidate threw away his commission in the National Guard and enrolled in the first officer's training camp at Fort Snelling. Offered a major's commission there, he refused it for a provisional second lieutenancy in the regular army because the regular army was getting ready to go into battle. He was assigned to the 9th Infantry, 2nd Division. The battle history of that outfit never can grow dim. For sheer courage, its men never will be excelled. The young lieutenant at first was used as an instructor. When his regiment went into action, he demanded to be sent back to his regiment. No transfer came, so what did he do? This battle commander, on foot and by truck, he got to the front lines by going AWOL. Shortly, he became known as a fighting man absolutely without fear. One of his many citations so described him. Soon, he was awarded the Distinguished Service Cross. Before it arrived, he was cited for another one. He fought through the major battles of our AEF, and France gave him the ribbon of her Legion of Honor. It gave him 5 Croix de Guerre citations. A different Italy gave him her Cross of War. To the DSC, Uncle Sam added the Silver Star with 2 clusters and the Purple Heart for men wounded in action. 1 DSC citation resulted when this soldier jumped out of an ambulance that was taking him to a hospital when he heard that his regiment was having tough going up in Bellow Woods. He was sick, but he went back to fight, and his colonel and his regiment were astounded to find him in no man's land when he was supposed to be in bed in a hospital. At regular intervals, there came to 2nd Division and 9th Infantry headquarters orders for the arrest of the officer who had gone AWOL away back in the line. He, that officer, was the regimental battle commander who received the orders for his own arrest. He tore them up and went on fighting. Years later, in Washington, he found in War Department files a record showing he still was absent without leave. He tore that up also. He had a right to do so because, in addition to fighting, when he could have been back of the lines, inert in bed, he now had become the Assistant Secretary of War. He too has seen war. He too hates war. But his experience was where men die. He would not ask you or others to send your sons to die unless he were willing to send his own, and he has 3. He comprehends all that war involves, especially in the preparation of the boys' war to the last possible moment of peace with honor and independence. Back from France's blood-drenched fields, where he saw comrades die for a cause that was scuttled by peacemakers who knew or thought they knew they needed us no longer, this overseas veteran came home and organized his own business, went back to work. outstanding soldiers joined their comrades in making him state commander of the Legion. Soon he was a national figure. He became one of the most popular and active commanders, national commanders, in the whole history of the Legion. He was the first national commander of the Legion to be elected by acclamation. He visited every state, spoke to hundreds of thousands, who cheered him to the echo, and newspaper editorials everywhere lauded to the skies this man's Americanism. No group can be more effective in its fight for our democracy's preservation than that constituted of the men who went to war in 1917 and 18. There are 4 millions of them. No man could galvanize them into immediate action as readily as the leader we offer you, their battle commander. Party lines and differences would disappear as mist beneath an August sun. For this fellow is loved by men who know what he has done and can do. I have talked with voters of the Mississippi Valley from the top to the bottom, through the Southwest and in the Northeast and the Southeast, including New England. It's their votes, not your or my political oratory and banner waving, that will win next fall. If you want the support of a great body of voters who can bring you victory, it's yours for the asking. Our answers to the challenges we here must bring out now in a campaign for America by Americans. Not just an emotional campaign which ignores our world obligations, but a campaign designed to bring world respect for a powerful people determined to survive this seething, mad, man-made cauldron of hate. Calvin Coolidge in 1925 asked Iowa's candidate to serve as the Assistant Secretary of War, who supervised the development of an industrial mobilization plan that might be applied immediately if ever we went to war. A successful industrialist and an experienced soldier, he fulfilled the Coolidge assignment brilliantly and came home again. Leaving in the War Department a studiously conceived plan for the emergency mobilization of our industries under exactly such circumstances as exist today. Then President Hoover asked him to go to Canada as United States Minister, because he wanted the waterway, the St. Lawrence Waterways Treaty, ratified in Canada and Washington. And he told our man that he was the only man that could get Canada to do something. And he was. He got Canada to do what Hoover wanted. Then he came home again. The worldwide economic collapse that was inevitable after the war came. Business and banks disappeared everywhere beneath sledgehammer blows. But not the business and the bank with which this fighter was, and still is, occupied and identified as owner. On the firing line today, as 22 years ago, this battle commander has fought off the collectivism whose advocates would substitute it for your democracy. He still fights for the convention, the liberties this convention must save. Again, so what? Need I tell you? You want from this week on a leader whose ability and courage have been proved wherever he has labored and fought. A man who has been a Republican from his first vote, never deserted his party, and for whom no apology, explanation, or alibi is needed. One who would unite our people in a dynamic demonstration of national solidarity under a safe, sane, and solvent federal administration. Our candidate's convincing voice and colorful personality, general and genuine magnetism, drive over the loudspeaker, over the microphone, and into the loudspeaker that will play such a tremendous part in this campaign. His deep convictions and high intelligence convey themselves to every listener. And now listen to this. His foreign policy would be neither silly nor mysterious. He would demand absolute worldwide respect for the Monroe Doctrine throughout this entire hemisphere. He would in turn respect every government everywhere which unqualifiedly recognized the validity and integrity of our Monroe Doctrine here. He would not insist that other governments keep out of our business and yet tolerate our interference with their business. He would be consistent, rational, American, first, last, always. Well, what else do you want in your foreign policy? A man whose administrative, governmental, and military experience is on the record, so that none need guess or gamble as to his qualification for any task he may undertake, for any office he might hold. the business and administrative policies that have made him an outstanding success will give you and your country a similarly great federal success in government under his keen and courageous guidance. He is no skyrocket that flares above the horizon and burns to useless ashes. He is no trimmer who sets his sails to catch every fickle breeze. He is no opportunist waiting for a ride on some gaudy bandwagon whose destination nobody knows. He fought the New Deal from its birth, and he's fighting it still, and he'll keep on fighting it. An example of how he fights I can give you parenthetically. I heard two delegations asking him questions the other day, one delegation at a time. They were asking about the farmer. He gave his ideas on farming. They asked him more questions. He answered every one of them right now. When he got through, he says, "That's the way I feel about it. Take it or leave it." He does not propose to fiddle. This battle, Commander, while our New Deal Caesars set their Rome and ours ablaze. He will not dawdle while this democracy dies. He never flounders when there's a fight to win. His is a record beyond challenge or comparison, if what you want in your leader is sound experience and training for leadership. The cobwebs gathering on our democratic way of life and the poisonous spiders weaving those cobwebs will be swept ruthlessly out of Washington if you send him there to do the job. He wields a resistless broom against incompetence, greed, and graft. He is the answer to the earnest prayers of millions of Americans who see their country's peril. These millions will enlist in his service for the duration of this battle you're all talking about, if he directs it as he knows how to direct it. They're waiting for you to give them this man or one like him, and where do you find another like him? To rid them of the parasites who have spread dissension, corruption, intolerable debt over the land. They want a leader who will defend this hemisphere and let those alone who let us alone. If you are a realist, here's your chance. The fate of the country is in your hands. You delegates must save what soon may be the last great democracy on the face of this earth. You and you alone, independently, intelligently, realistically, acting as wisdom directs. We must change horses. Not in the middle of a stream, but before we reach the middle of two oceans as slaves of a state gone mad. Our candidate will not see your banners lowered in defeat so long as an ounce of his tremendous energy and yours is left to defend our heritage from Washington, Franklin, Madison, Monroe, Jefferson, Patrick Henry, Lincoln, and a host of early giants. Their shades are at your shoulders. Around you hover the spirits of millions yet unborn, awaiting your fateful decision as to whether they will one day have that right to life, love, and liberty which has been ours and which only we may give them. For the sake of God and country, do not fail these of a glorious past and of what can be an even more glorious future. Do not fail them in this, the most critical hour of all world history. We must know the ends we seek before the great engineer may direct us there. Ladies and gentlemen, with full confidence in your patriotism, your republicanism, and your logic, I give you for Republican nomination for President of the United States, Battle Commander Hanford McNider of Iowa.
The conclusion of the nominating address by Vern Marshall of Cedar Rapids, Iowa, for his candidate Hanford McNider of Iowa.